cry of pain. She hit the dirt. Falling onto her back, the air knocked out of her. Dazedly, she turned to one side, looking out at a lawn sparkling with shattered glass, as though someone had tossed handfuls of diamonds in the air after a heist. "Jesus!" Aiden shouted, hands in his hair. "You should have seen how that thing's arm got scorched. He nearly got you." She staggered to her feet. The fresh scrape on the back of her leg burned, and she started to shake all over again. "I think he did get me." "What?" Aiden took a step toward her, and Tana shook her head. "Not now," she said. The car was right there. They were almost free. "Help me with the trunk." Rolled up in the blanket, Gabriel looked like a body that a pair of murderers were planning to dump somewhere. He was lying on his side, body bent so that his back was turned to the sun. Together, Aiden and Tana heaved him up and off the car. But as they tried to carry Gabriel, Tana stumbled and pulled the wrong way. The bags ripped, the cloth falling open. She slipped, tumbling onto the grass. For a moment, she saw his side and hand blackening in the sun, light seeming to eat away the flesh. Before she could think to do anything, Gabriel rolled over, turning his body so that the exposed part was pressed against the dirt, hidden from the light. "Gabriel?" Tana said, scrambling up, wrapping the blankets back around him. He tried to stand. Stumbling and exhausted and not very careful, they managed to open the trunk and dump Gabriel heavily inside. Aiden slammed it shut, donning his bad boy about to do a bad thing grin. "Aiden," she said, taking a step back, her voice coming out half as if he'd annoyed her and half as if she was afraid, which she was. "Aiden, we don't have time. You have to get in there with him. I can't drive with you wanting to attack me."
"Have you looked at yourself?" he asked her, his voice odd, almost dreamy. "You're covered in blood."
She glanced down and saw that he was right. Her skin was dappled with shallow cuts, welling and streaking red down her arms and legs. A smear on the back of her hand where she'd wiped her face. It must have been fragments of glass from the window.
"We have to go, Aiden."
"I'm not getting in the trunk with a vampire," he said, looking at her hungrily, his eyes black with desire, pupils blown. "See? I'm controlling myself. You're bleeding, and I'm controlling myself."
"Okay," she said, pretending to believe him.
"Get in." As he walked toward the passenger side, she picked up the tire iron and her boots. She knew what she should do. Hit him in the back of the head and hoped it knocked him unconscious. But she couldn't. Not with a house full of dead kids behind them. Not when she wasn't sure he would survive the blow. Not when she was shaking so hard she was about to shake apart. She took a deep breath and made her decision.
"No, on the other side," she told Aiden.
"You're going to drive." He turned back to her, brows knitted in confusion.
"It'll give you something to concentrate on other than biting me, and I can keep an eye on you."
She held up the tire iron.
"And we head where I say. Understand?"
"I've been good," he complained.
"Get in,"
she shouted. And somehow that, of all things, seemed to work. With a sigh, he walked around the front of the car. She got in on the other side and passed him the keys, holding the metal bar up with her other hand to show she'd use it if she had to. It was solid and smelled faintly of oil and hung comfortably heavy in her grip. Aiden took a quick look at her face and turned the key in the ignition.
"Go," she said under her breath, like a prayer. "Go, go, go, go."
He pulled across the lawn toward the road. In the rearview mirror, the house looked like an ordinary clapboard farmhouse, except for the broken window and the bit of curtain fluttering through it. A lone and lonely ghost. Chapter 6. On the plus side, death is one of the few things that can be done just as easily lying down. Woody Allen. Aiden had been the worst boyfriend in the world. They'd met in art class, which Tana had taken only because her friend Pauline had promised her it'd be easy and full of other slackers. Pauline was more or less right. Their teacher spent the time painting trompe-l'œil of arched windows leading into darkness-soaked rooms,
or somewhat grisly still lifes of rotting fruit, flies, and spilled honey. He sold the paintings in a gallery three towns over, and told the class at length about how he needed the money since teachers' salaries sucked, especially in these dark times. Basically, so long as everyone worked on some kind of project more or less quietly, he didn't bother any of them. Pauline decided that she was going to cut up yearbooks and glue tiny pieces to stiffened linen so that she could make a bra out of the heads of the boys in class. She planned to frame it in a shadow box and sneak it into the award cabinet once it was done. Tana was mostly doing nothing, drawing idly with charcoal and talking to Aiden. He was just a cute boy in class back then, one with floppy brown hair that fell in front of his eyes when he talked, who wore clean band shirts with hoodies zipped over them, bright red chucks, and a black and white checkered belt. He smiled a lot and laughed at his own jokes, and told Tana lots of stories about the unfathomable girls he seemed to find himself dating. He seemed hapless and good-natured. He was always in love. He smelled like ivory soap. Pauline teased Tana about him, and Tana just laughed. She got why girls fell for him. He was charming. But he was so upfront about trying to charm her, so obvious that she was sure she was immune. Aiden's project was a life-size papier-mâché version of himself, posed as if he were asleep in class. He badgered Tana into measuring him for it, and she rolled her eyes as she wound the tape around his upper arms and across the width of his chest. When he grinned down at her, raising his eyebrows as though they were sharing a joke, she realized she wasn't immune after all. He asked her out soon after, not on a real date or anything, just to hang out with some friends. And she went, had a few beers. When he kissed her, she let him. "You're not like other girls," Aiden said, pressing her back against the cushions of the couch. "You're cool." Tana tried to be cool, tried to act as if it didn't bother her when he flirted with anything that moved, and that one time when he was really drunk, with a coat rack. She'd heard all his stories about the possessive girl who texted him over and over again when he was just out with his cousin, or the dramatic girl who sent him 10-page letters, the writing smudged with her tears. She didn't want to be the star of another crazy girl's story. And it didn't bother her. Not really. Not in the way Aiden seemed to expect. Sometimes it hurt to watch him with someone else, sure. But what she really minded was that he always seemed to be monitoring her for signs that she was going to scold him. She minded going to parties, where she made awkward conversation, drank a lot, and pretended that everyone wasn't waiting for her to pick some kind of giant fight with Aiden. And she minded not knowing the rules, because anytime she asked him about them, he just stammered elaborate conversation-ending apologies. When she suggested he go to parties alone, he would make an exaggeratedly sad face. "No, Tana," he'd say. "You have to be there. I hate going to things by myself." "You could go with friends," she'd suggest, laughing at him. Because it wasn't as if he was ever alone. He knew everyone. He had lots of friends. "I want to go with you," he'd say, his eyes big and pleading. His mouth quirked in a little half-smile, as though he was acknowledging how ridiculous he was being. And it worked. It always worked. That combination of flattery and little boy silliness and, underneath it all, the fear Tana had that she wasn't as cool as he thought she was. So she went to parties and pretended nothing bothered her. And the more Tana didn't say anything, the more outrageous his behavior got. He would make out with girls in front of her. He would make out with boys in front of her. He would wink at her from across rooms, daring her to criticize him. That's when things got kind of fun. She schooled herself to even greater nonchalance. She'd walk over to Aiden after he seemed to be finished kissing someone, curl her arm around his shoulder, and ask to be introduced. She'd assign points for style and take away points when he'd struck out. No matter what he did, she never let him see it bother her. "You're playing some kind of game of sex chicken with him," Pauline told her, pushing back a mass of tiny braids. "Who cares which one of you flinches first?" "Sex chicken?" Tana said, snickering. "Too bad we don't know anyone in a band. That would be a good name." Pauline whacked her with the magazine she was reading. "I'm serious. You know what I mean." Tana couldn't explain why she kept on with it. Couldn't put into words the nihilistic thrill that came from suffering a little or the satisfaction of playing Aiden's screwed-up game by his screwed-up rules and still winning. She was cool, and she wouldn't be uncool no matter how much he goaded her. While Aiden sometimes seemed annoyed that she didn't hassle him, there were other times he told her there was no other girl like her. No other girl in the world. You can't win when someone else makes all the rules, Pauline warned her. Tana didn't listen. Then one night, at another party, Aiden motioned her over and introduced her to the boy sprawled on the couch beside him. The boy's mouth was pink, and he looked a little drunk from the bottle of tequila in front of him and from the drowsy kisses he'd been sharing with Aiden. "This is my girlfriend, Tana," Aiden said. "You want to kiss her?" "Your girlfriend?" The boy looked momentarily hurt, but he hid it well. "Sure," he said. "Why not?" "How about you?" Aiden asked her, challenging her. "Are you game?" "Sure," Tana said, her daring so tangled up with her determination that she wasn't sure which one made her agree. Her heart hammered against her chest. It felt scary, as if she was stepping across some invisible boundary, as if she might not know herself afterward. As if she were becoming the self she'd always thought lurked just underneath her skin. Her coolest possible self. The boy's lips were very soft. When she looked up at Aiden, the shock on his face went to her head like a shot of strong liquor. She was giddy with power. And when the boy kissed her back hungrily, she was giddy with that, too. Aiden leaned forward, and his expression had changed. He had a smile on his face, like they were sharing a joke. Just her and him. As if he got that all the parties were games of check and checkmate. As though Aiden knew they were both doing this in the hopes that the adrenaline might blot out every shitty thing that had ever happened to them. And he was glad she was with him, that they were together. It made her think of a year before, when she'd stood alone on train tracks and waited until the train was barreling toward her, until she could feel the heat of it, until her blood sang with fear before she jumped out of the way. It made her think of another day, when she'd pressed the gas pedal down on her car and gotten skidding through the night streets, slicing through icy rain. He smiled at her as though he really believed she was special. As though only she had ever really understood what it was to take a dare for the sake of being daring. But none of that turned out to be true, because Aiden dumped her 3 weeks and a half dozen parties later with a message that said only, "I think we're getting too serious and I want to take a break." After that, she wasn't sure what the game was or if she'd imagined it. All she knew was that she had lost. Chapter 7. Death is a shadow that always follows the body. English proverb. Tana directed Aiden to pull the car into a gas station about an hour after they'd left Lance's house. There were no other cars in sight, and these days all 24-hour marts had bulletproof glass cashier's booths, so she thought it'd be safe to stop. Full dark had fallen. Her arm was starting to ache from holding the tire iron, and she was pretty sure she wasn't going to be able to keep it together much longer. Exhaustion was creeping up on her, her cuts stinging and her head throbbing. She hadn't eaten anything since she'd woken, hadn't even thought of eating, and each time her stomach growled, Aiden looked over at her as though her hunger reminded him of his own. It was hard to stay alert, hard not to be distracted by images of the farmhouse, of bodies, rising up behind her eyelids when she blinked, everything drenched in red. And along with that, the memory of the vampire's teeth scraping the back of her leg, his hand clamped on her calf. She'd watched programs in health class talking about the spread of infection. There'd been an illustration of the human mouth and the vampire mouth side by side. She thought of it, illustrated in blue and yellow, pink and red. Vampire canines grew longer than their human counterparts, with thin channels that let the creature draw blood up through its teeth and into the back of its throat. When a vampire bit down, A little of its own fouled blood was pushed into the human bloodstream, causing infection. There'd been cases like hers before, cases where the teeth didn't fully penetrate. Sometimes people were fine, sometimes they weren't. If she didn't go cold in 48 hours, she'd know her luck had held. Aiden pulled up to one of the pumps. "We can't keep driving without a plan. We've got to go somewhere." "I know," she said, her panic-fogged mind going round and round, every possible move seeming worse than the last. She had no idea what to do next. All she knew was that she felt about ready to jump out of her own skin. As he opened the car door, a lock of hair fell into his eyes. He pushed it back, the way he'd always done. It seemed like such a normal gesture when everything else was so not normal. When he wasn't normal, that she had to swallow past the lump in her throat. He reached for the pump, selecting regular unleaded. Tana felt as though everything was happening much too slow and too fast all at once. During the drive, she'd been afraid to talk, because if she started, she wouldn't be able to hold how she felt inside. She wouldn't be able to make him believe she was in control. "We'll get a map and make a plan," she said, hoping he wouldn't see how tired she was. If she seemed weak, she might seem more like prey. She made her voice as steady as she could. "I'm going to the bathroom to get cleaned up first, though. I'll meet you in the mart after you're done with the gas." From the trunk, she heard a soft thump. Gabriel was back there, waiting to be freed. But what would he do then? Were they supposed to just dump him by the side of the road and hope for the best? "We'll be right back," Tana called, and though she tried to control it, her voice quavered. Slinging her handbag over her shoulder and grabbing her boots, she walked steadily away from Aiden and the car until she got to the corner of the mart, then ran the rest of the way to the bathroom, slamming the door behind her and locking it. Before she could help it, she started sobbing. She cried and cried until she choked on her tears. She slid down the wall, crying so hard she could barely catch her breath. She slammed her fists against the loose linoleum tile of the floor, hoping the pain would shock her into calming. "Shock," Tana thought. "I'm in shock." But she didn't really know what that meant, only that it was bad and that it happened in the movies. In movies, people got over it quickly, too, usually with a slap to the face. Standing, she slapped her own cheek and watched it become rosy in the mirror above the grimy bathroom sink. She didn't feel any different. After long moments of standing there, staring at her reflection, she remembered that she'd said she was going to get cleaned up. She washed her arms in the sink, splashed water on her legs to rub off the blood. She couldn't see the scrapes on the back of her knee very well, but from what she could see, they looked not much different from her other scratches and cuts. They didn't seem swollen or discolored. They didn't seem deep. They didn't seem like anything at all, much less something that could turn her into a monster. She cleaned them with the antibacterial soap in the pump and shaking fingers, hoping that could kill any infection before it spread. Then she stood up, leaning against the locked door, and started lacing up her boots, pulling the ties tight. When she was done, she called Pauline. Dialing the number was automatic, giving in to the temptation of momentary escapism. She couldn't think as the phone rang. Her mind felt empty of everything but the feeling that if Pauline answered, then she was going to be all right for a little while. Tana didn't know what she was going to say, didn't even know how to put together words to explain where she was or what had happened. She'd been operating on instinct and impulsiveness at Lance's farmhouse. Get everyone out and worry about the consequences later. But later had come. It was waiting for her outside the door. She could only forestall it. "Hello?" Pauline's voice was loud and in the background. Tana could hear music playing. "Hey," she said, like everything was normal. It felt good to pretend. Muscles along her shoulders relaxed minutely. "What are you doing?" "Hold on, I have to go into the other room. So much is going on." A door shut on the other end of the line and the music dimmed. Then Pauline started telling Tana the news about David, her kind of sort of boyfriend at drama camp. He had a girlfriend back home, a girl he'd been with since middle school, but he'd been giving Pauline mixed signals all summer. Intense conversations and made-up excuses to touch each other during improvs, followed by agonized hand-wringing, His girlfriend was coming to visit Tuesday, but just that night, David had kissed Pauline. She was freaking out. Tana felt relief wash over her along with the familiar drama. She sagged against the doorframe, tipping her head back and closing her eyes. She could have interrupted Pauline, could have told her about the nightmare drive through the dark with a tire iron in her hand, told her about the vampires and the carnage and the scrapes of teeth. But if she did, she would have to think about those things again. So she listened to Pauline tell her story, and then they rehashed it a bit, and when Pauline asked her how she was doing, Tana said she was fine. She was fine, and the party had been fine, and everything was fine, fine, fine. "You sound weird," Pauline said. "Have you been crying?" Tana thought about asking Pauline to find an abandoned place with a door that could be barred and lock her inside with a few gallons of water and granola bars. Pauline would do it for her. Tana knew she would. And a week later, when Tana begged and howled and screamed to be let out, maybe Pauline would do that as well. It was too big a risk. So Tana insisted that she was really, really fine. Then Pauline had to go because she had a 9 o'clock curfew and was leaving the common room to head back to her dorm. For long minutes after Tana hung up and put away her phone, she tried to hold on to the feeling of normalcy. But the more she stood there, the more her stomach cramped with fear, the more she was aware of how her skin felt hot and cold at once. She had to not be infected, that was all. She had to not be infected so she and Pauline could move to California after graduation as they'd planned. They were going to rent a tiny apartment, and Tana was going to get a boring, steady job. Like maybe be a waitress or work at the front desk at a tattoo parlor or at a copy shop, where they'd get discounts on headshots while Pauline went to her auditions. They were going to do each other's makeup like pinup girls from the 50s and wear each other's clothes. And they were going to swim in the Pacific Ocean and sit under palm trees while the warm breeze off the water ruffled their salt-crusted hair. Finally, Tana realized that she couldn't stay in the bathroom any longer. She opened the door, braced for an attack, braced for one of the vampires from the house to have followed her somehow. But there was no one and nothing. Just a concrete lot and woods, lit by the flood lamps over the gas pumps. The night was sticky warm, and in the distance she could hear the singing of cicadas. Not caring if it made her a wimp to hate the dark, she ran back toward the brightly lit mart, only slowing when she was at the door. She jerked it open, wishing she hadn't left her tire iron in the car, even though she was sure they didn't let people bring stuff like that into regular businesses. From behind the bulletproof glass, a clerk grinned at her like a man who wasn't too worried about his security. He had a mass of red hair sticking up from his head in gelled spikes. There was a small television, mounted high up on one wall, showing a feed from inside the Springfield Cold Town, where Demonia was introducing viewers to the newest guests at the Eternal Ball, a party that had started in 2004 and raged ceaselessly ever since. In the background, girls and boys in rubber harnesses swung through the air. The camera swept over the dance floor, showing the crowd, a few of which had looping hospital tubes stuck to the insides of their arms. The lens lingered over a boy no older than 9, holding out a paper cup to a thin blonde girl. She paused, and then, leaning down, twisted a knob on her tubing, causing a thin stream of blood to splash into the cup, red as the boy's eyes and the tongue that darted out to lick the rim. Then the camera angle changed again, veering up to show the viewer the full height and majesty of the building. At the very highest point, several window panes had been replaced with black glass, glowing, but designed to keep out the kind of light that could scald certain partygoers. Tana's scar throbbed, and she rubbed it without thinking. "Hey," Aiden said, touching her shoulder and making her jump. He was carrying a bottle of water, but he stared at the screen as if he'd forgotten about everything else. "Look at that." "It's like the Hotel California," Tana said. "Or a roach motel. Roaches check in, but they don't check out." All infected people and captured vampires were sent to cold towns, and sick, sad, or deluded humans went there voluntarily. It was supposed to be a constant party, free for the price of blood. But once people were inside, humans, even human children, even babies born in Cold Town, weren't allowed to leave. The National Guard patrolled the barbed wire-wrapped and holy symbol-studded walls to make sure that Cold Town stayed contained. Springfield was the best known and the biggest Cold Town, with more live feeds, videos, and blogs coming out of there than from Cold Towns in much larger cities. That was partially because it was the first, and partially because the Massachusetts government made sure that people trapped inside had power and communications sooner than those in the others. The outbreak in Chicago had been contained so fast that the quarantined area never had a chance to evolve into a walled city within a city. Las Vegas was Springfield's rival in live streaming vampire entertainment, but blackouts were common, disrupting feeds and making regular viewing unreliable. New Orleans and Las Cruces were small, and the Cold Town in San Francisco had gone dark a year after its founding, with no one broadcasting anything out. There were people in there. Satellites could track their heat signatures at night. That's all anyone knew. But Springfield wasn't just the best known and the biggest, Tana thought, looking at the screen. It was also the closest.
It'd be a good place to hide out, Aiden said, with a sly look at the car and the trunk with the vampire inside.
You want to turn Gabriel in for a marker? Tana asked him. There was one exception to the whole not being allowed to leave thing. One way out of Cold Town if you were still human. Your family had to be rich enough to hire a vampire hunter, who would turn in a vampire in exchange for you. Vampire hunters got a bounty from the government for each vampire they put in a Cold Town, but they could give up the cash reward in favor of a marker for a single human's release. One vampire in, one human out. Even amateur hunters who turned in a vampire could get a marker. If Aiden got one, then he could go into Cold Town, and if he stayed human, if he beat the infection, he could get out again.
Not for a marker, Aiden said, his eyes still on the screen. For the cash. We could get some serious money from the bounty on a vampire. Enough for me to hole up for a couple months in some crappy hotel and ride this thing out.
I think I got... not bit, exactly. She blurted the words that she couldn't tell Pauline, that she'd been afraid to say out loud. He needed to know if they were going to make real plans.
Scraped. With teeth.
That made him look at her. Really look at her. His eyebrows drawn together with actual concern.
And you don't know if you're going to go cold?
I have to assume I am. She tried not to let him see how scared she was. How her heart thundered to say the words.
We have to assume.
He nodded.
It'd be enough money for both of us to hole up for a while. Two rooms, two keys. We could pass them under the door to each other when we were done.
But we've got to do something. I'm hungry, Tana.
Gabriel helped us.
She stopped herself, unsure. The farther they got from the farmhouse, the more Gabriel seemed like a monster all on his own. She thought of his eyes, red like spilled garnets, red as poppies, red as the bright embers of a fire. She thought of what they taught in school. Cold hands, dead heart. Plenty of vampires had forgotten how to feel anything but hunger. He'd helped her, sure, but that didn't mean she could trust him not to turn on her now that they were out of danger. Vampires were unpredictable. At least that gives us a direction to head in. I'm going to grab some food. You should try to eat too, see if that cuts down the craving. She waited for Aiden to make some comment, but he turned to watch more images from Cold Town on the tiny television. His lips slightly apart, his cheeks flushed. If she was a good person, she'd take him there. In case he gave in to the hunger, he might. And if he did, he'd be ageless, eternal. He'd be charming girls with his flipped hair until the earth crashed into the sun. If she was a really good person, she'd take herself there, too. Tana walked around the store, picking up a map with numb fingers. There were notices tacked to a board near the coolers. Photos of teenagers with missing underneath and phone numbers. Advertisements for guaranteed homeopathic remedies to ward off vampires. Kittens free to a good home. And one notice reading only, "Call Matilda for a bad time." Tana grabbed a root beer and then a bottle of water for later. At the deli case, she selected the least scary-looking sandwich. Turkey and yellow cheese on white bread. And picked up two of them along with half a dozen packets of brown mustard, an apple, and a bottle of ibuprofen. Then she made herself a jumbo-sized coffee emptying in a packet of hot chocolate for good measure. Dumping her feast in front of the guy behind the bulletproof glass, she paid for that and the gas. She had about $40 left, the remainder of her last paycheck from her part-time job at the movie theater concession stand. $40 and a very sketchy plan. Tana wasn't sure how much Aiden knew about what going cold was actually like, but if he was picturing himself in a hotel room, watching television and sweating through it as if it were some kind of drug withdrawal, then he was picturing it all wrong. Once he was in the grips of the hunger, he'd break down the door if he could. They'd attack each other. And then they'd attack other people, maybe even kill them. Spread the infection even further. But if they weren't going to go to Cold Town, and they weren't going to hole up somewhere, their only choice was to turn around and go home. Drive Aiden back to his house. Talk to his mother, a small, quiet woman in a house dress who had made Tana cups of tea when she came over, and never commented on any of the outfits she or Aiden wore. Tana would have to explain that her son had gone cold. Talk to his father, whom Tana had never even met. Tell them, and then what? Were they really ready to confine Aiden somehow and ignore his screams, knowing that if he got loose, someone would get hurt and they'd get arrested? Or would they ship him off to Cold Town anyway and pretend there were never any other choices? And what about her? Where could she go to sweat out the infection? Not the basement, where her screams would echo off the walls as her mother's had. Not the basement, where Pearl could hear her. Okay, Tana told herself with a sigh, taking a big swig from her mocha. Time to go. Outside, the cool breeze blew back her hair and the bag of food swung from her hand. She was looking forward to sitting down and eating. Then, after she felt a little less lightheaded, she would decide on a route. As she headed across the station to her car, she noticed that the trunk of the Crown Vic was open. "Aiden," she said, her voice hushed. Slowly, dread in her step, she crossed the asphalt. The locking mechanism had been torn off, and one of the hinges seemed loose, as though bent. Chains were coiled in a pile where Gabriel should have been, along with the remains of the blankets and black garbage bags. "How did he..." Aiden started, then stopped himself. "He tore them," Tana said, pointing to a metal link, warped out of shape, stretched and broken on one end. "If he did this, then he could have always gotten free. Back at the house. He played us." "Maybe they're weaker during the day," Aiden said. "Like this one time, I found a bat just sitting on the side of the bank in town in the middle of the afternoon. It was tiny and looked really miserable, so I stuck it in my shoe and brought it home. I thought it would be cool to have a pet bat, so I kept it in this old birdcage, and it just chilled out. Until night. Then it wasn't docile anymore. It got out somehow and started flying around like crazy. When it spread its wings, it looked like this giant, massive Aiden," Tana said. "He's not a bat." She stared at the mauled metal of the trunk and the way the chains were torn like tinfoil instead of steel. He shouldn't have been able to do that. Vampires were stronger than humans, but not that strong. "There's a reason people used to say they turned into bats," Aiden said cryptically. She sighed. Maybe he was right, in a way. Maybe, like the bat in the birdcage, Gabriel had been waiting for dark, waiting to get out of the chains, drink Aiden's blood, and escape. But when she showed up, he figured he could use them for a ride through daylight, so long as he seemed harmless enough to need saving. A chill crept up her spine. "Well, he's gone now. It's just you and me." Aiden grinned lazily at her. It was the exact expression he always wore when he was about to talk her into something. "Yeah," said Tana. He kept staring and his expression shifted. She didn't think he was seeing her anymore. He was seeing skin and bone and blood. She took a step back. The tire iron was on the passenger side seat where she'd left it. She'd never reach it in time. "So let's get back in the car and keep going. Maybe find a hotel, like you said." She was just talking, trying to say something that would distract him. "Hole up, like you said. Or we could give in to temptation." He shook his head slowly, coming closer. Think about it. You don't mean that, she told him. Why not? He asked, advancing. It could be fun. There's people out there who'd kill for what we have. I don't want to be a monster, she said, stumbling away from him. Out of the corner of her eye, she noticed the gleam of a security camera mounted on the aluminum siding of the mart above the door. Let's get in the car. You can try to convince me. I promise, I'll give it serious consideration. Oh, good, Aiden said, and he lunged at her. She'd been half expecting it, given the way he was talking, but the attack still caught her off guard. He was her friend, and no matter how much she knew he wasn't safe, all her instincts pushed her to trust him. She threw the mocha she'd been holding, hoping the hot coffee would scald, and ran. His legs were longer, though, and he was faster. He tackled her, his weight bearing her to the asphalt. She felt his cool breath on her neck, and her knees and palms stung where she'd scraped them falling. The bag of food fell next to her, cracked root beer bottle frothing as the tide of liquid spread to soak the skirt of her baby doll dress and mingle with spilled gasoline, washing away the spent stubs of cigarettes. This is it, she thought. This is where I'm going to die, and it's going to be on film, watched by the clerk from behind his wall of glass, taped on camera and maybe broadcast later for her father and sister. Aiden made a sound like a gurgling scream, and Tana winced, waiting for the inevitable pain. But instead of the blunt burn of teeth, she felt him releasing his grip on her, and she heard him shout. She rolled onto her back, one hand reaching for the broken bottle, the only weapon available. Her fingers closed on it, and she swept it out in a wide arc, hoping to hit skin. Then she gasped. Gabriel was standing in front of her, his arms around Aiden's chest, his mouth on Aiden's neck, his eyes shut. There was a terrible peace in his face as he lifted Aiden off the ground, a terrible pleasure as his throat moved, drinking down swallow after swallow of blood. Aiden's eyes were half open, heavy-lidded, and focused on nothing. He wasn't struggling anymore. His mouth hung open in sensual bliss, his body shuddering with sensation. For one long moment, Tana couldn't move. It was more than the fear of drawing attention to herself, more than the fear of being hurt. She ought to be horrified. She found herself mesmerized instead. Aiden moaned, low in his throat. Gabriel's fingers tightened, pulling Aiden's body against his. Slowly, painfully, Tana pushed herself to her feet. Blood and gravel stuck to her knees and palms. Her once white dress was filthy. Gabriel, she said as firmly as she could manage, and prayed her voice wouldn't shake. She thought of the way you were supposed to talk to wild animals, the way you couldn't let them know you were afraid. Gabriel, let him go. He didn't move, didn't even seem to notice. She grabbed his arm, half expecting him to whirl on her. Please, let Aiden go. He's going to die. The vampire pulled back his head, eyes shut, fangs red, and mouth split in a wide grin. Then his eyes did open, bright as torches, and she stumbled back, terrified. Aiden's body sagged from his arms to the pavement. From the way Gabriel was looking at her, she wondered if he was thinking about the blood rising to her cheeks, of the way it pounded along with her speeding heart, the flush of it on her skin and the way it colored her lips. It came to her, all of a sudden, words he'd said to her in Lance's house. If I am hurt, you must be very careful. No, Tana, you must listen. You must be careful of me. He hadn't been worried he was going to get hurt. He'd been worried that he was going to hurt someone else. Don't, she said, shrinking back, the jagged bottle stem she still had clenched in her hand seeming hopelessly inadequate, a bright piece of glass and nothing more. Please. Gabriel wiped the blood from his mouth with the back of one hand. Come, Tana. The night is young and your friend is very tired. We should make him a bed. A cap of flowers and a kirtle, embroidered all with leaves of myrtle. His voice sounded odd, abstracted. She bent down to where Aiden was lying and touched his chest. It rose and fell as if he was indeed only sleeping. Is he going to... Will he live? No, said Gavriel. No chance of that. He wants to die, so he will. But not tonight, and not because of me. Oh, Tana said. So he's okay. Under the floodlights, Gavriel's skin looked nearly white, his mouth stained red despite his rubbing it. It was the first time she'd seen him standing, and again she was struck by the incongruity of him. Tall, bare feet, jeans and a black t-shirt turned inside out. Messy black hair, chains gone, looking like the shadow of a regular boy. A boy her age, who wasn't a boy at all. And there was a body slumped at his feet. Yes, he said, reaching out a hand. But you're hurt. She looked down at herself, at the mess of her dress and the mess of her knees and the mess of everything. I haven't had a very good day. I think I might still be hungover and everyone's dead and my root beer's gone. Horrifyingly, she felt her eyes prick with sudden tears. He bent down and picked up Aiden, slinging him over one shoulder. We'll get you another day, Gavriel said, with such odd sincerity that she had to smile. Chapter 8. Our dead are never dead to us, until we have forgotten them. George Eliot. Sometimes there are stories in the news about little kids who do bad things because they don't know any better. Like playing with loaded guns that go off and kill brothers, or lighting matches that accidentally set fire to a whole house. It's not the kid's fault. Except that it is, really, only no one wants to say it. Who else is there to blame? The kid is the one who disobeyed, the one who stole the keys and unlocked all the locks and almost let the bad thing out. What really happened in the basement of Tana's house wasn't like any of her happy dreams where she and her mother frolicked together. After she'd gone down the stairs, a monster had attacked her, mad with hunger, teeth gnawing with such ferocity that the vein in her arm was severed, gobbets of flesh sliding down its throat. She had shrieked and shrieked for her mother, but her mother was already there. Her mother was the monster. When Tana woke up, she found out that it was her father who'd saved her. He'd used a shovel to hack off his wife's head. Then he'd made a tourniquet from a strip of his shirt and taken his disobedient daughter to the hospital where doctors sewed up her arm. No one said it was her fault. No one said they hated her. No one said it was because of her that her mother was dead. No one had to. Chapter 9. And what the dead had no speech for, when living, they can tell you being dead. The communication of the dead is tongued with fire beyond the language of the living. T.S. Eliot. Tana could barely keep her eyes open. Gavriel was at the wheel, having taken the keys from Aiden's pockets after depositing him in the back seat. Tana should have protested, but she'd let him get in on the driver's side, let him turn the key in the ignition. She'd gathered up the bottle of water and the two sandwiches, still wrapped in plastic, brushed off the grit, and eaten them while they sped along the road, headlights picking out the dark shapes of trees and houses. The windows were down, and Gavriel's hair blew around his face like frayed black ribbons. She didn't know where they were going, only that they were driving away from her former life and into a distorted funhouse mirror version of it. After the food, she felt as sleepy as if she'd been drugged. It was the adrenaline draining away, she was pretty sure, the terror receding. She tried to convince herself that she wasn't safe, that she was in a car with a vampire who, in addition to being a vampire, was talking like a crazy person, but her body didn't seem to have any more fight in it. She blinked a few times, trying to stay awake. What was going on back at the house? Those chains. Why didn't you get out of them before, if you always could? I killed someone. A vampire. And I was exhausted, and... He stopped and looked at the road for a long moment. She studied his features, the androgynous, exaggerated beauty of his wide mouth, and lashes so heavy they made him seem like he was wearing eyeliner. My mind is not as it was. There is a madness that comes over us when we're starved and carved. A madness that can be cured only by feeding. But such things they have done to me that it would take a river of blood to wash away all my wounds. I struggle for my most rational moments. I could have gotten out of the chains, yes, but it would have cost me. Which meant it had cost him, later, in the trunk of the car when he was already burned. "You don't seem crazy," she said. "Well, you don't seem that crazy." The side of his mouth lifted in a half smile. "Some of the time I'm not. But the rest of the time is most of the time. And when I am, unfortunately, I am all appetite." They left me there with the tied-up boy, saved for the following night like a sweet on the pillow. I was still waiting for it to get closer to dark when you came in. Tana watched the shadows shift across his face along with the lights from the road. She wondered if he could smell her blood, drifting from her pores along with her sweat. She guessed that he'd planned on draining Aiden before he escaped, even if he didn't say so out of some sense that it was bad manners. She wondered if Gabriel thought about biting her. His face, turned to the road still, was as calm as a statue of a saint in a cathedral. But she had seen him with Aiden. She had seen the way his fingers dug into Aiden's skin and how the muscles in his neck strained. And when he looked at her, mouth painted with blood, his gaze hadn't tracked. She wondered what it would be like to be infected and to give in, to let herself be turned, to be ageless and frozen and magic and monstrous. There were so many girls and boys running away to Cold Town who would do anything to have the infection burning through their veins the way it burned through Aiden's. The vampires inside were incredibly circumspect about biting people. That's why all the pictures of them feeding inside Cold Town showed them feeding from tubing and shunts. More vampires were a drain on the food supply. What Aiden had, what she maybe had too, was rare and desirable. There was a girl Tana had met, a friend of Pauline's, who cut thin lines on her thighs with razor blades before she went out to clubs, so that a vampire might be drawn to her. When she looked at Gabriel's mouth then, it was still stained carmine along with the swell of his lower lip. Maybe because he'd saved her at the gas station and she was feeling grateful, or because she was so tired, she found herself fascinated with his mouth, the way it curved into a sinner's smile. She knew she was looking at him like a boy, like a gorgeous boy whose smile could be admired, and that was dangerous and stupid. She didn't even know if he thought of her as a girl at all. She needed to stop thinking about him like that. Ideally, she should stop thinking about him entirely, except as something dangerous. Why were they after you? Those men and the thorn. Was it bad, what you did? Very bad, he agreed. An act of mercy that I regret. Endlessly, I regret it. I had a tutor once who wanted me to believe that mercy is a kind of sorrow, and that since evil is the motive of sorrow, evil is also the motive of mercy. I thought that my tutor was old and cruel, and maybe he was. But now I think he was also right.
But that doesn't make sense, Tana said, leaning against the cushioned headrest. Mercy can't be evil. It's a virtue, like kindness or courage or... Her voice trailed off. He turned to look at her.
This is the world I remade with my terrible mercy.
She shook her head. That doesn't make sense either. Then helplessly, she yawned. He laughed, sounding like any boy from her school. She wondered what color his eyes had been long ago.
Go to sleep, Tana. Lean back your seat. If you let me borrow your car for tonight, I promise I will repay you. Oh, yeah? She asked, looking at him with his bare feet and his plain dark clothes. With what? The smile stayed on his lips. Jewels, lies, slips of paper, dried flowers, memories of things long past, useless quotations, idle hands, beads, buttons, and mischief. She was almost sure he was joking. Okay. So where are we going? She asked, her head nodding against the window. His voice was soft. Cold Town. Oh, she said, blinking herself awake again. I must. But if Aiden comes through the gates with me, he'll be safer. And you'll be safer without him. They'll hunt for him out in the world. And he's likely to start hunting too. But what if he doesn't want to be a vampire? Tana asked. As soon as the words left her mouth, she realized that he would want it. Of course he would want it. Didn't he say as much before he attacked her? Being a vampire would get him all the glory he could ever imagine. He wouldn't just be known as the guy at a party most likely to seduce someone else's girlfriend, or the small-town boy yearning for a big city. In Cold Town, he would be drowned in attention. And the massacre at the farmhouse would make his story only more tragic, more romantic. Plus, Aiden was hungry. She was the one who didn't want to be a vampire. And she was afraid that as time went on, she'd become less and less sure of that. The fever is in his blood, Gabriel said. He looks for no cure but one. I think he has decided in his heart, but who can confess to such a decision? It's hard to fight the infection, Tana said, her voice coming out harsher and more despairing than she'd intended. She didn't want to talk about her mom. She didn't want to tell him that the fever might be in her blood, too. In a few hours, she could be as bad as Aiden. They can't. You don't understand. It takes them over and they can't think straight. He said nothing in return. In that silence, she realized how stupid she was being. He must have been infected once. Must have given in to it. Must know better than she did how it felt. If you go to Cold Town, she said, hoping to change the subject, you won't be able to get out. Are you sure whatever you're going there for is worth it? What's that? He asked suddenly, one hand leaving the wheel to touch her arm. What? She said, looking down. His long fingers traced the outline of the scar just beneath the crook of her elbow, his expression unreadable. Her skin felt too warm against the coolness of his touch, as though she were feverish. These are old marks, he said finally. You were just a child. Should it matter? Tana asked. She was usually careful, but she must have pushed up the sleeves of her dress. Why should death discriminate between age and youth, you mean? He asked calmly. Death has his favorites, like anyone. Those who are beloved of death will not die. She was relieved he hadn't asked her any of the awful, stupid questions she'd grown used to. Who bit you? I heard that it doesn't hurt when you're bitten. Does it hurt? Did you like it? Come on. You're lying. You did like it, didn't you? But then he must know most of the answers. Seems like death came back for me. He grinned, a subtly odd grin that somehow made her smile back. You drove him off again. Sleep, Tana. I will guard you from death, for I have no fear of him. We have been adversaries for so long that we are closer than friends. I'll just close my eyes for a minute, she said. It's not even really that late. There was something else that she wanted to say. Something that she was sure she was on the verge of saying, but the words were swallowed up by the night. Tana awoke to the sound of voices. She was alone in the car, spread out across the front seat, head pillowed on her arm, one of her booted feet kicked up against the glass of the driver's side window. the pleasant scent of coffee in the air mixed with car exhaust. She felt chilled through, as though she'd kicked off a blanket in the middle of winter. For a moment, waking up seemed like a nice thing to do. She remembered a party and being worried about going alone, where she was sure she was going to run into Aiden. She heard his voice outside the car, though, so it must have all worked out. Except for memories that seemed to be part of a nightmare. Stuff that couldn't be real. Blood and empty eyes and a shimmering rain of shattered glass. Then everything came back to her in a rush and all her muscles clenched with instinctive alertness. Her heart sped and she scrambled in her seat, kicking the wheel in her eagerness to be upright. Her Crown Vic was parked in a lot, far from the central cluster of cars and trucks. In the distance, she saw a large sprawling building, blinking bulbs and glowing floodlights announcing it as Dead Last Rest Stop, open 24 hours. The sheer gaudy brilliance of it made the outer edges of the lot seem even darker by comparison. She'd never been there before, but she knew the place, the same way she knew south of the border. Kids at school wore t-shirts emblazoned with the logo or plastered its bumper stickers on their cars. The Dead Last Rest Stop was as flashy and famous as it was because of its proximity to the first cold town. They'd come a lot of miles while she slept. Gabriel was sitting on the hood of her car, a paper bag and a steaming cup resting beside him. His head was down and, shadowed as his face was, he looked like a pale human boy and not a monster at all. Aiden stood with his hands in his pockets, talking to two people she didn't know. He must be reeling with infection, but he seemed to be hiding it well, his voice only a little unsteady. The pair were a girl and a boy, their dyed hair the vibrant azure blue of butterfly wings and gumballs. They looked so alike that Tana thought they must be twins. "You sure you can give us a ride? I mean, thanks, of course, but I just want to make sure you're serious," the boy was saying. His hair was razor-cut in the back and sprayed into a shaggy, teased mop with longer pieces framing spiky bangs. His eyes were lined with kohl, and a single silver stud shone just above the right side of his lip like a beauty mark. "Out here in the dull world, we're just a couple of kids without any cash, but inside it's all about barters and favors and who you know. Midnight is tight with lots of people through her blog, so we're going to be set up when we get to the city. We brought plenty of stuff to trade, and we've got a plan. So we could help you if you help us." Aiden smiled.
"Definitely."
He looked back at the car, toward Tana. She wasn't sure if she should get out. It was bad enough that he was promising people rides.
"Heading to Cold Town was kind of an impulse for us," he said. "So we could use a guide."
The girl, Midnight, touched Aiden's shoulder.
"Reckless," she said, as if there were no higher compliment.
Her hair was much longer than her brother's, parted on one side to hang in her face, falling completely over one eye. She wore skinny jeans with a blue velvet top and grubby, home-dyed ombre blue ballet slippers. Two rings threaded through her lower lip, and the one in her tongue clacked against her teeth as she spoke.
"We're part of this online network for people who are planning on going to Cold Town. We used to post all the time about meeting our destiny, claiming all the stuff that normal people don't want. We'd talk and talk and talk, but how many of us actually did anything? We say that you've got to be willing to die to be different. I bet you believe that too."
The boy pointed a painted fingernail at Aiden.
"You don't even know him, Midnight. He could be doing this on a total whim. He might not be serious. He could be high. He could balk. Look at him. There's something wrong with his eyes and he's sweating."
Midnight rolled her eyes, sarcasm in her voice.
"That's a nice thing to say about someone who's offering us a ride."
She looked at Aiden.
"Don't mind Winter. He's overprotective."
"So are you willing to die to be different?"
Aiden asked them. And Tana heard the hunger in his voice.
"For sure," she said. "I wanted to go last year, but Winter didn't want to be 16 forever, and I had to admit, it was kind of lame. So we compromised. We're going to be 18 in a month, and that seemed old enough to go."
Midnight and Winter, Tana thought. She knew that the names had to be fake,
and that the way they looked was an elaborate artifice, but they wore their strange beauty like war paint. They made an intimidating pair. Winter looked down at his calf-high boots, buckles running back and forth over the length of them, frowning as